Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hart Glass, and thanks for joining me today for It's All About Food here at the Progressive Radio Network. I'm in the studio with my guest today, and I'm really looking forward to what may come out of this program. But first, I want to tell you what I'm doing here in the studio, something that I like to do for a living, and that is breathe. We were just talking about the importance of breathing, and I'm feeling a bit frazzled, and I feel like a lot of people have got a lot of stuff going on, and it's always important to get back to really the simplest basics of all, and that's breathing. So if you want, you can join me for a moment. Let's just take a nice big breath. Okay, I'm letting go of everything just so I can be here in the moment. And this is going to be a really good moment, a delicious moment. I am here with Pedram Shojai. And this is, I want to call him Superman or Superperson or just amazing, everything I've read. And now he's sitting right next to me and I'm getting chills, not just because I'm in an air-conditioned studio that's freezing. He is a man with many titles, and he's the founder and CEO of Well.org. I know you've been there, Well.org. He's the editor of Be More magazine, the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Urban Monk, and Rise and Shine. The producer and director of the movie Vitality, the executive producer and writer for the film Origins, and the host of two weekly video podcast series, The Urban Monk and The Health Bridge. He also has recent projects launching in 2017. That's now, everybody. The new movie Prosperity, which we'll be delving into a bit, and his new book, The Art of Stopping Time. In his spare time, he's also a Taoist priest, a doctor of Oriental medicine, a Kung Fu world traveler, a fierce global green warrior, an avid backpacker, a Qigong master, and an old school Jedi biohacker working to preserve our natural world and wake us up to our full potential. Ooh. Wow, I just feel all energized, just energized and exhausted, actually, reading your bio. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to It's All About Food. So you're just in from Hollywood. You had a big event.
Mm-hmm.
Was it fantastic?
It was great. It was great. Myself and a couple of filmmakers have been working to help young, kind of aspiring new talent in documentary to look at alternative distribution and be like, listen, you know, if you're going to go spend your 5 years of your life doing this thing, you know, betting the farm and trying to make the world a better place with it, traditional distribution typically won't work for you. So here's how you use the internet to get this in front of millions and millions of people and really make the change that you're striving to make.
Yeah, well, I like going outside of the box. I don't want to be cliche there, but we're all finding that the traditional, conventional ways aren't necessarily in our best interest for just about anything.
No, you know, from education to healthcare to food to politics, I mean, everything is kind of falling on itself because these old systems no longer work. We've changed, we've adapted. And so, you know, and people can really bemoan all this, but, you know, it's just mulching for the new systems that are coming, right? And so for me, it's fine. Like, people, we just resist change. It's time for change. And this is, you know, and what I've been doing is following positive examples of people doing it better. And, you know, it's like, you know, Mother Teresa said best. It's like, I don't go to an anti-war rally. I go to pro-peace ones.
Yes, right? Yeah. So I remember when Dennis Kucinich was in Congress and he kept talking about creating a department of peace rather than a department of war. What do we really want to focus on?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And so, you know, the incentives are stacked in other directions right now, and what's funny is the people of the world don't want war. The people of the world don't want race riots. The people of the world, you know, don't want to be sick. But these things are here because there's certain economic and financial play that keeps them alive, and it's just time to reexamine some of this stuff.
I like to point the finger at capitalism because I find capitalism as we have it today is strongly based on exploitation of people, animals, and the environment. Mm-hmm. And so you have a new film out, and it's demonstrating that we can have profit, but also have a purpose. We can have social benefit and still make money or mm-hmm. still, you know, live comfortably. And it's exciting and inspiring to hear that, because capitalism is something that needs to change.
Yeah, and if you look, and so, you know, full disclosure, I'm not like an economist guy. I'm a doctor priest guy. And so I started looking at this with just kind of open eyes and being like, what is this, right? If money is the root of all this stuff, what are we doing? Why are we driving off a cliff? Why are the world, if business keeps growing and the world's problems keep growing, then what's wrong with this system and how do we shift it so we don't kill ourselves? I mean, it's pretty simple math. Like, you know, I've got kids. I don't want that to be part of our future, right? And so when we started looking at it, I started looking at examples of people that may be doing it differently. And I found a lot. There's some really cool people. There's some great examples.
Yeah. So that's what we're seeing in this film. Now, it comes out October.
This week in theaters, yeah.
How exciting. Is it in New York?
It's in New York. It's the IFC in New York. It's at the Lemley in L.A. It's in 26 other markets at the Studio Movie Grill. And we're going to go from there. But in October, we're going to release it online for free to the world for the month.
Wow. Yeah. Oh. Look at that, everybody. We all like free, don't we?
Yeah, well, that's part of it, right? It's like, you know, I spent 18 months of my life and, you know, we spent a lot of money and did this the right way. It's a beautiful film. Mm-hmm. But the message is so dang important that we're like, look, you know what? Let's just spend the month of October sharing this and allowing people to share it with everyone they can. It's already being translated into Spanish, German, and French, and we're working on more languages, but it's just time and money. You know, we're just trying to move as fast as we can. And it's already influencing the few people that have seen it, like, you know, in the press and stuff like that. They're like, wow, I left there feeling enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I left this movie feeling like there's hope. And that's what I want. I mean, it's really easy to say, you know, the sky is falling and we're screwed. That doesn't really help my children's children, right? And so everyone's just in this, like, shocked, panicked yep. frenzy, and they've been shocked into inaction. Well, that certainly isn't going to help. So what can I do right now to be a part of something that is positive and can make a difference? That's what the movie's all about.
Yeah, I saw it, and it definitely is very positive and very inspiring. And I think we all love to see it happening right in front of us, that it's not something we're talking about that we can do. It's happening. There are companies that are making the effort to do it. And some of the stories are really, really quite lovely, and there's even a happy ending.
What's a Hollywood tale without a happy ending, right? Yeah, but something really cool happened in the making
Very
of the film.
Cool.
And
yeah.
You know, I'm not going to disclose it. But
no. It,
you know what? If you just you see a problem in front of you and you just start moving in the direction of solving the stuff in front of you, it's just the entire universe conspires to help those things happen. But it's all determined by whether or not we put in our intent, whether or not we put in our energy and step up to do anything. And my whole thing is like, if you're waiting for Washington to fix your problems, you're in trouble, right?
The government is always the slowest behind everything. So we talk about food on the show all the mm-hmm. time, and I have all the experts that know the latest science and the best foods that we should be eating and what our food system is doing to our environment and to our health and to people all around the world. And the government, they're just like in another century. They're not even in the 21st century. You can't expect them to create any policy to support what's in our best interest.
It's regressive, and it's also, I mean, if you just look at how the financial incentives are stacked, the government's gotten really bad. And, you know, this entire kind of thing with Trump coming in and talking about draining the swamp. I mean, he wasn't wrong about that. I mean, the way lobbies work in Washington are egregiously, you know, tilted towards people just paying to play and buying their politicians and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, since he's come in, there's been other regressive kind of moves. And, you know, for me, I actually think it's a great wake-up call on both sides, because it's like, you know, everyone's waiting for someone to fix problems in front of them instead of picking up a shovel and getting to work. And so we've all got to dig ourselves out of this hole. How do we do it?
Yeah. All right. I like focusing on food because this show is called It's All About Food, and I can always find a way to connect everything through food. And the movie does touch on food in a number of different ways. Where is food in your life other than nourishing yourself and your family? How far are you taking where you go with the food that you eat?
If you think about what the difference is between needs and wants in humans, what we need is food, water, shelter, love. It's kind of it, right? What we want is Mercedes-Benz. What we want is trips and flights and, you know, this shirt versus that shirt and all
cake.
These other things. And cake, right? Yeah, we want cake. And so what the advertising industry is all predicated on is making you feel like you're not whole and, you know, what you really need is to wear this perfume that this celebrity wears, and then you're going to be beautiful and attractive, and then you're going to get taken care of, and blah, 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 down the road, down the line, right? And so it's all predicated on these wants, not these needs. Food is an actual need. Like, you know, if you, you don't get too far without eating.
No, I've heard about breatharians. I've never met one.
I've never met one that I believed. Yeah, exactly. I'm a breatharian right now, but I'm actually hungry.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk out there, but at the end of the day, food makes up your cells. Food is what you become. The food you eat is the person you become in the next few days, months, and years. And so it's the fundamental relationship you have with reality and nature is all grounded in the food that you eat. And the food chain has been usurped. The supply chain of food has been, you know, compromised in a lot of ways. And there's no wonder why people are sick. Right? You start looking at, this is my last movie we explored this, right? Is you start looking at why everyone's sick and not feeling well and moody and cranky and you know, all of it. And you start looking at the inputs through the food, also the inputs through the environment. And, you know, if you take your kid to the park, there's glyphosate everywhere and all this. And then you wonder why, you know, autism's on the rise and cancer, you know, rates are still up and everyone's getting diabetes out of nowhere. It's just, none of this is arbitrary. The smoking guns are there. I've already done 2 health films, like, you know, I've gone there. And food becomes also the most powerful way of radically transforming all of this, because we do have organics, we do have non-GMO, we do have options that say a lot about everything. So if you're supporting a food that comes from a farm, that takes care of the bees, that doesn't poison the environment, that you know, uses environmental stewardship to sequester carbon in the soil and all sorts of wonderful things that can happen through organic farming, you're voting for the world you want to see, right? And so mindlessly buying food that comes from a supply chain that's poisonous is also a vote.
Right. So there's a group of people, I'd say it's small, maybe it's growing, that are concerned. They want to vote with their dollar. They want to support businesses that they feel are doing something good and buy products that they feel are good for them and their families. But there's a big bunch of people, the majority, especially in the United States, that are very into convenience. They're into low cost, and they don't care about the future, which blows my mind. I don't have kids, but anybody who does have kids, don't you care about your kids' future? Apparently not.
Hmm. But if you ask them, they would say they absolutely do.
They do.
But you hippie liberals, you know, want to take away all my liberty. And so everyone's been brainwashed in a different direction,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's not that, like, I've never met a mother who didn't actually care for their kids. They've just been brainwashed into thinking all that stuff is nonsense and, you know, this stuff is just fine, or it costs too much and I'm poor and I can't, or, you know what I mean? There's a lot of other mm-hmm. narratives that are infecting a very simple decision.
That's a good word, infecting, okay, because it is in some ways a disease.
Yeah, everything is, right? Everything is a psychological, spiritual disease of not seeing clearly. Right? Just not seeing clearly.
Yeah.
And the sooner we wake up and look at things clearly, the sooner we can make better decisions towards a future that we could all enjoy together.
Now, were you always awake?
I was asleep last night.
No.
I was actually asleep on the flight over.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just a normal kid, right? And then I ended up having some kind of mystical experiences going into my college years. And didn't know how to, you know, deal with it and couldn't really explain it. Was fortunate / wise enough at that young age to realize that I needed help. So I found a Kung Fu master who then became, you know, kind of the elder, you know, lineage that kind of pulled me in and contained this monkey, you know, and like really kind of helped me find my way inside of a lineage so that I wasn't just untethered and spiritual. Right.
And you have children. How old are they?
My eldest is 3.5. My baby is turning 2 in November.
Well, they're little babies.
They're little babies. We waited.
Yeah.
We waited.
So, what is your plan for educating and raising them so that they can be awake in life, except during sleep and nap times when they're supposed to be sleeping?
If I'm saying this on the air, my wife's going to kill me, but here we go.
No one's ever asked you?
No. I actually have a very specific plan that's hatching now. We are planning on moving to Puerto Rico, even with all the storms and stuff that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
We are planning on, with a number of families, opening a biodynamic farm that feeds our families, uses local labor. We're planning on moving the kind of elder leadership of the forest school that a couple of our friends' kids go to, and I can explain what that is, for the kids, and then the kids that are in the forest school will rotate onto the farm and understand how to grow their own food the whole time, and we'll have all of it. We plan on the kids being in Spain and France and Germany and Japan and homeschooling based on their own strengths, but also learning how to learn and then learning how to be in different cultures. But I will not subject my kids to the glyphosate in the public parks. I will not subject them to the poison of TV and the Disney Channel, making them think that they need to buy these toys and, asking for superheroes, this and that. I've just been watching the whole thing saying, ooh, this is very early stage brainwashing, and this is biological warfare, and it's aimed at my children at a very young age. No, I choose differently.
Well, I applaud you.
Thank you.
Did you have this plan before the Puerto Rican floods?
Yes.
Okay.
And despite it, now, like myself and one of the families, we're kind of double downing and being like, okay, these people need our help the most. These people need us to kind of step in and help support this island even more. So let's show up with buckets.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? So there's a lot kind of behind it. Is these are people and they're suffering. And so, I want to show up and be a part of something, especially if I'm, you go there, there's tax breaks and all the sorts of stuff. I want to earn. I don't want anything that I don't earn. I want to go there and stimulate their economy and help them. And if their power grid is down, then why don't we just start over and start with solar?
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I mean, it's horrible, all the things that we've heard about. But I'm thinking, here's an opportunity to start over and make it all localized in every place. Why do you need one of these crazy, big, giant, inefficient grids?
No.
I mean, we have the technology now.
We have the technology. It's a reset. The federal funds are going there. We, as people of America, are paying for it. Why don't we go do it right? You look at what happened. Like, Salt Lake City was a dump before the Olympics, right? And then the Olympics came, and they revitalized. They got new roads. They got internet. They got all this stuff. And now, all of a sudden, it's, blossoming. So it's let's rethink how this thing happens. Decentralize it, make it more resilient. It's not like global warming's happening. Climate change is happening. Turns out that's not a hoax. and it turns out that the Caribbean is more susceptible to it. So how do we build resilience into systems? And I almost want to set up a center for the awareness of climate change in Puerto Rico on the ashes or the puddles left of this hurricane. To be we're going to take our cameras. This is an awareness campaign that builds out from here, and we're going to work on new tech and resilience to try to change this in our lifetimes.
Back to your children. You mentioned the forest school. What is that?
So a few of our friends do this. We don't have one where we live, so we're jealous. I get a little FOMO. But basically, the kids get dropped off. The entire class, the curriculum, everything is based out in the woods. The kids, rain or shine, are in the woods all day. Mm. They're learning math in the woods. They're reading in the woods. And they're playing in the woods, and they're discovering. And that pine cone over there, let's go look it up. And so these kids are developing incredible resilience. Their rhizosphere and their microbiota are way healthier, and they're just well adjusted and adapted. And they look you in the eyes like little human kids used to.
Yeah.
Mm. Right?
Instead of, I'm looking at my hand like I'm looking
dumb
at
device.
My phone.
Some dumb device that's sucking the life force right out of your kid's consciousness.
We were just talking about at home how social media is really an oxymoron.
Mm. It's not social at all.
It's not at all.
I got to tell you a story. My wife's cousin, some kids, 15 years old, And he was going packing up. We were over there. He's packing up to go to a birthday party of his friend, and he's packing his huge computer. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, we're going to go, and we're all going to sit around a table and play these video games, you know, with each other. And I'm like, what, you're 15? Mm-hmm. Like, when I was 15, I used to play basketball and, like, go chase girls. Like, what is a 15-year-old boy supposed to do? I was furious. I was fuming. I'm like, who are these morons? Like, and I was like, I was yelling at the mom. Like, why are you letting him do this?
Exactly, because it's easier.
He's a zombie. You go, well, the kids today, they all do this, right?
No, they don't.
That's like what the prison guards in Nazi Germany say. Well, all the guards today, they all do this, right? It's just like you're just walking like a lemming off a cliff. No, not my kids.
Yep.
No thanks.
Have you seen the film Captain America?
No.
Have you heard about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah. I haven't watched it.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Am I thinking of Captain? No, I've got the wrong film. It's Captain, help me, everybody. It's Captain something. This man who raises his children in the woods. It's, you know what I'm talking about. It'll come to me in a minute. Not Captain America, the comic superhero. No, with the big wheel.
Yeah.
No, this guy raises his children in the woods with his wife, but his wife has some mental issues, and she's trying to commit suicide, and it has a dark side. But then he has to bring the family to Captain Fantastic.
Captain Fantastic.
And he brings the children back into society to go to her funeral, and it's just an amazing film.
So for me, I'm not interested in also being a Luddite. Like, my kids, you know, are in town. Like, we'll live in a house with, you know, fast internet and all that, and mm-hmm. just shield it at nights. And, you know, if my wife wants to go dancing, we'll grab the dancing shoes and go to Miami or New York and, you know, travel and go to Paris and London. Like, I want the best of what the world offers. But having your kids be in toxic exposure all the time just doesn't work. I mean, I've seen the data. It doesn't mm-hmm. work. And everyone's like, but I need the Chanel. I need the purse. I need, you know what I mean? It's like everyone is willing to subsidize the apocalypse because fashion dictates it, right? It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. No, nothing makes sense today.
Right.
Nothing makes
sense.
Well,
you know what? Hugs make sense.
Good
food makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, you're right. I shouldn't say
sunset,
nothing. It's
sunsets
not
makes
that.
Sense. Yeah, but like, so that's my point, is what if the answer to all of our complexity was actually simplicity? Sunsets make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Beaches make sense.
Absolutely.
If this one's dirty, let's clean it up, right? And so, like, I think we could take a lot from nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm curious about it. You've put out a lot of material, and you do a lot of stuff, and it's amazing, and it's all great. And you have a book out about stopping time, which I'm really curious about. You're at home. You're with your children. What's a meal look like for you? Where does the food come from? And
we have our own garden, which subsidizes at best because we're not farmers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we get tomatoes and basil and stuff like that out. We have a CSA box delivered every other week. And then we supplement with, you know, vegetables from Whole Foods and, you know, some stuff from Trader Joe's. And, you know, it's mostly like, you know,
you're like regular people.
Like normal people. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like I'm, you know, carving bark and chewing on sticks. You know, there's ways to get healthy supply. Like, I'm not Farmer Smurf.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm Movie Smurf, and that's fine. But I rely on ethical Farmer Smurf to get me something that's not going to poison my children. So I just make sure I choose wisely how I shop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to see how people live who are promoting an idea, you know, and walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to see how people who are promoting things that I like, how they walk.
Sure. And it's not always easy. Like, you know, I travel a lot. I'm in
mm-hmm.
airports and stuff.
Exactly.
And, you know, at a certain point, you're not like, is that grass-fed? Nowadays, you can get away with that at certain places. Or you could, you know, just get vegetables. Are you sure those vegetables weren't grown conventionally? You know,
mm-hmm.
if you're in Omaha, less likely. If you're in New York, you might be able to get something like that, you know? And so that only happens and that only grows by people choosing the healthy vegetables, choosing the pasture-raised stuff, depending on, you know, what your ethics are lined up with. You can still choose the cleanest, most sustainable source, period, but people don't really even think about that. So, you know, that's a thing, too. It's a big thing.
I was talking to Eric Tonesmeyer a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week already on the show, about Project Drawdown. And I'm really fascinated with that book and all the solutions that they offer. And I'm focusing on like the top few. The first one I like to repeat because most people don't even think about it, and that's refrigeration management, and how refrigeration really is the most dramatic thing that we could do to reduce human-induced greenhouse gases. And you think, what? But so refrigeration management is up there, and that's refrigerators, that's air conditioners, and it's putting them in landfills and not minding where all those refrigeration fluids are going, because those are really dangerous. But then number three and number four are the ones that I'm very passionate about. Number three is waste and working on dealing with waste. And we learned a long time ago, reduce, reuse, recycle. So the key is to reduce waste. And there's so much food waste from when food is grown till the time you throw it away in your garbage can. There's so many places where the food is wasted. But one of the things I liked about in your movie is not just food waste, but also waste, trash waste, plastic waste, that there are so many things that we can do that can help clean up and reuse it in a way that's really wonderful. And that's inspirational, because I keep thinking about all this crap all over the world. What are we going to do with it? But we can do something with it.
Well, we don't have to make it in the first place. It's, you know, probably a decent answer. But, you know, there's also electronic waste, which is a huge, huge thing.
That what most are we going to do with that?
Oh, my God, there's a new iPhone.
I know. No,
right.
But that's not what we're going to do with it. What are we going to do with all the all the waste?
Well, I mean, so we're looking at, you know, some of the solutions that came through the film, and, you know, I've continued. It's not like the movie's over, but the movement's just beginning, kind of thing. And now we're looking at, you know, some of the stuff that we do with these local tribes. We're like, why do we need to bring this here in plastic in the first place, so that we have to take the plastic out? So, you know, we're looking at 3D fabricators and all sorts of interesting things to deliver like raw materials and products. And so it's like, here, fill up your gourd. Here's your glass jar, right? And there's a lot of things that are coming that are making a lot of sense because of technology and the will to do it. And plus, the consumer is just tired of it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's
just, you know, you go
We're
to some,
tired of garbage.
You can't hide from it anymore. And, you know, landfills are fine, but, like, you get all these cruise liners dumping all this crap over into the oceans, and you get these huge, you know, islands of plastic in the ocean, and, like, species of crabs that are now eating the plastic and turning into plastic animals. Right. And I mean, this is happening right now. And so when you look at all that and you're like, wow, that's gross and creepy. Well, you know what? That bottle of water that you just chucked just added to that. Right. And so how do you get clean, potable water in a container that is something that doesn't end up as trash? I mean, this is something we all have to ask ourselves.
Yeah. I was just reading about some new invention that uses a certain kind of algae. Which naturally is strong and can hold fluid while it has fluid in it, but as soon as it's drained, it shrivels up. And they're thinking about using that in terms of bottling liquids.
Great. And to me, that's one of the things that's really kind of turned the corner for me and allowed me to feel really enthusiastic about capitalism in that capacity, is whoever invented that, I hope they become a gajillionaire.
Exactly.
Go get it, dude. Go get it. Go get it. Great idea. I love it. I'll give you money, right?
Okay, so let's just wrap this up. Tell us about prosperity and where we can find out more about it and where we can see it and how we can see it for free soon and all of that.
Prosperityfilm.com. That'll, you know, take you everywhere you need to go. We're doing a global free screening through October, trying to just really keep it open and free as long as we can to share it with as many people. So prosperityfilm.com is where that is.
That's beautiful. Well, I wish everybody to go out there and watch Prosperity and then learn how to help make the world more prosperous for everybody.
Amen. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Padron, for joining me on It's All About Food. Now we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back. I really do hope you check out that film, Prosperity, especially when it's free, right? You can't beat that. But in this day and age of gloom and doom and all of the seemingly wrong decisions that are being made left and right, up and down, here and afar, you will be inspired and kind of encouraged to see what you can do in your own life once you see what others are doing to make pretty good change. And like Pedram talked about, it, in some ways it's about making things simpler, not more complicated. I hope you enjoy that film. Okay. I'm waiting for my guest to arrive, and I'm not surprised that he isn't here yet because he happens to be running restaurants, and it can be a crazy time there. But he'll be here soon, and I'm looking forward to that. But meanwhile, let's just talk about food and my experiences with food over the week. You know, I've said from time to time that when I visited friends in hospitals or medical facilities, some things have improved in some places, but not most, and not where I was this week. So I've been talking about taking my parents around, and my dad has been requiring some medical attention. He is 89 years old, and he was having a treatment this, actually it was last Friday, yeah. And it was a two and a half hour procedure, whatever. And they serve treats. So while you're being treated to boost your immune system with immunotherapy to fight cancer, they feed you treats. And those treats that they serve are the kind of things that are known to do what? Promote cancer. And is it what we were talking about earlier, that people really mean well and they just have been manipulated and don't know what they're really doing? I don't know. All I know is they had some nice little energy bars that were filled with all kinds of sugary sweeteners. And while the sugar that's found in whole fruits is fine and good for us, the sugar that's processed is not and does not react the same in the body when it's not being digested with fiber. And it can do a lot of damage, and it can also grow that cancer. And there were pretzels and chips, and where was the fresh fruit? Where was the broccoli? Where were the mushrooms? Who wants to snack on those? I do. But part of it, I keep thinking, is they want to keep their customers coming back. The hospitals, anyway, the medical facilities. Keep them well enough so that they can buy all of these crazy products, but not that well, because you want to keep them coming back. And there's not a whole lot that I can do about it once I'm there. What I do want to do is scream, but I don't think that would get me very far if I started screaming, right? Okay. I had a chance recently to create a new dish. And actually, I'm going to be bringing on my guest soon when he shows up, which is Craig Cochran, who is the co-owner of a very new restaurant, PS Kitchen. And we've mentioned that new restaurant on the show before. I think it opened in August, and I was there mid-August. And the dish that I chose was a ginger congee. Have you ever had congee? Congee is like a rice soup where you cook rice, typically white rice, and you cook it for hours, 2, 3, 4 hours, so that the rice just totally falls apart and it's creamy. And you can season it typically with mushrooms and ginger. I love when it's just loaded with ginger. I made one, but I didn't use white rice because we like to use whole foods. We like to use minimally processed foods. We like to eat the whole grains with their exteriors that are filled with all kinds of important nutrients rather than the polished version of rice that takes all the good stuff off before you eat it. And I made a congee. It didn't get as creamy as the white would, and I only cooked it for about 3 hours. Maybe if I cooked it for six, it would have gotten creamier, but it was fantastic. I used black rice and red rice and brown rice and tons of ginger and some shiitake and porcini mushrooms and just cooked it up. And it wasn't complicated. Just throw it in a pot and stir it occasionally and just add water if it keeps drying up. But I love congee, and I'm so glad that I was able to make it at home. Another thing, as I deal with my parents aging and going through some of the things that they're going through, I'm committed more than ever, and I've always been committed. Maybe I should be committed to eating as healthy as I can, because, you know, a lot of us say that we don't want to become our parents. Well, I don't want what's happening to them to happen to me. Maybe it's selfish. Yeah, it is selfish. And I will be talking to Dr. Joel Fuhrman. I think it's next week. Yeah, next week. He has a new book out called Fast Food Something or Other. It's about fast food. And the book is coming out, I think, October 17th. And we'll be talking about it next week. And I'll tell you, one of the questions that I want to ask him, maybe you know the answer. We often talk about what unhealthy lifestyles can do. We know that processed food, lots of animal products increase the risk of cancer and heart disease and diabetes, all those chronic diseases, autoimmune diseases, and make the body age faster and make it feel not as good as it should, not as energetic as it should. The pain and the aches increase with poor lifestyle, poor diet. And then we talk about how the increase of just dying, it comes earlier when we're not taking care of ourselves. But if we do take care of ourselves and do everything known to us that we can to keep our body fit and in shape and well-nourished, what is death supposed to look like? And that's what I want to know. Do you know? Is it just we live and maybe slow down a little bit and then fall asleep? That would be nice. But do people do that? Do people that are living a really healthy lifestyle and are fit and well-nourished, is that what happens? Because I don't hear that happening very often. I'm kind of curious about it. So that's what I've been thinking about. So I'm waiting for my guest, and he's not here, and he's supposed to be on his way. Craig Cochran is quite an ambitious person, and he's put together a number of fast food vegan restaurants here in Manhattan, as well as this very new high-end PS Kitchen, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the stories about that. One of the things that I learned from eating in the restaurant PS Kitchen is when they serve bottles of water, they have fresh mint in the water. And try it at home. This is something you can do at home. Just put a sprig of mint in your water. It's fantastic. It feels really fresh. And okay, come on in, Craig. Come on in. Thank you so much. Yes, have a seat. Put your headset on, and welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks for having me.
I can't imagine what your schedule is like.
That's interesting.
Something we did at the top of the show was something that I tell my audience I do for a living, and that's breathing. And I want to give you a moment to take a breath.
I'm good.
Great.
I'm a professional.
Yeah. I was just talking about the when we visited PS Kitchen, the water was served with fresh sprigs of mint. Are you still doing that?
We are still doing that. Yeah.
I want to tell you I did it at home.
It's pretty good, right?
It's fantastic. Yeah. I'm very particular about my water. So we have an under the sink water filter, and then I distill the water. So it's like double cleaned. And yeah. then adding them into it is just spectacular.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I've read a little bit about you.
Okay.
Oh, maybe I should... do I even have your bio here? Yeah, I should pull it up and tell us who you are. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, you founded a number of vegan restaurants, and I was following your story. And I want to start at somewhat of the beginning. The beginning of your story, what I want to say, is not necessarily unique for vegetarians. So you were a teenager, and you went to college, and I think a professor got you interested in vegetarianism.
Yeah, he asked, why do we eat pigs and love dogs? And, you know, we had a whole discussion about that. What's the difference between a pig and a dog, and who has dogs, and how would you feel if someone ate them, and all those things. So it just got me, certainly got me
thinking. The light went on.
The light went on. I never thought about it, really, before that. And, he challenged us to try it for a week, and that seemed very reasonable. So I tried it for a week, and now it's been 20 years. So
good for you. Yeah. What class was that?
Philosophy.
There you go, philosophy.
Yeah,
okay,
philosophy,
I love the vegan philosophers.
You know, to this day, I don't even know if he's vegan or vegetarian.
Right.
I just think he was the kind of person that liked to push buttons and push the envelope and challenge people, really.
Yeah.
And I'm happy he did.
I'm happy he did, too, for us, because we all get to benefit deliciously. Okay, so, but what I want to say about you is it's not that unusual for people who become vegetarian, especially at a young age, to start figuring out how to make their meals interesting and tasty and kind of like what we were used to eating, all that stuff. And then we think, oh, I have to open a restaurant. And everybody says it, but very few do it, and even fewer succeed. And I'm looking at you. The success story.
Thank you.
Yeah, yep.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, I was an activist as a kid. I wanted, or you know, when I made the conversion, I guess I wanted everybody to eat that way. I thought it was so much better for everybody, and I thought I made the best arguments in the world. But when the easiest argument for me was when I put a good plate in front of someone, and it just, you know, melted all their cares away. And I said, that's when the other light bulb went off. I said, I need to make this food more accessible. The food that was available to me in Buffalo anyway was not the type of food that I was used to and that I wanted or craved. So the idea was I was actually going to move to New York to learn how to do that and go back to Buffalo and open a spot. But I fell in love with New York. And so here I am.
I love New York.
Yeah, I love it here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's all about access, accessibility. You named your fast food restaurants after your mom, Terry.
I did.
And what does she eat? Is she following your path?
She eats close to the closer. You know, it's, you know, can't, I don't want to say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but she's much better. I mean, we are German. My grandma was from Germany, and the things that we ate, most people would. They'd be concerned if they
What's
saw
What's fascinating
our
about
diet.
Germany? The traditional diet very meat focused, but they have a tremendous vegan movement.
They do.
They are tremendous.
Do. Yeah, but that did not exist in 1913 when my grandma was born. But that's the other thing. I grew up with this particular palate in Buffalo, and you know, having German grandparents and. Growing up in Buffalo. So that's really inspired many of my dishes at Terry and also at the new restaurant, PS.
A lot of times I talk on this program when I talk about vegan restaurants that there's a difference in them, I think, than most other restaurants, because in addition to wanting to provide food, and I would want to think that most restaurant owners want to provide good tasting food, maybe not necessarily healthy food, but something... an atmosphere that people would enjoy. There's this undercurrent of love and with vegan restaurant owners, and this joyful wonder, because there's so much more to it than just providing healthy food
Yeah, I mean, it's well, thank you. I think that there are a lot of really talented people out there that are making incredible foods. And, you know, just in the 20 years that I've been vegan, it's been a huge change in all the options. But, yeah, I mean, this is something I'm passionate about. I think there's a lot of very passionate people out there right now making lots of delicious food.
Okay, now, in addition to all the wonderful things you're doing and the skills that you have, the timing is right. And because I've been vegan almost 30 years and watching different restaurants try and fail, and some of them were good, some of them were not so good, and some of them are still around, but, you know, maybe not making a big splash. I don't know if you were familiar with Zen Burger when they
came
out.
Yeah, I was familiar with Zen Burger. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were just before it was ready, but they didn't do everything right either, because I didn't think their food really tasted that good.
Well, I don't remember there being a lot of vegan options, for one. I remember going in there, I was super excited, and I think there was one thing I could eat.
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed at that. I know their footprint was really big. They had a really expensive property
location
in New York. And that's something I'm very cognizant about in New York. We have a commissary in Long Island City, which does a lot of the heavy lifting for the restaurants, and that's why I'm able to keep the footprint small, which keeps the rents down and makes us able to stay around. Yeah,
Manhattan is very expensive.
It's insane. So, if I threw out some numbers, people would just – I mean, like, never in my life would I ever think I'd be paying the rents that I'm paying. Well, like, coming from grew up in the projects in Buffalo, so $20 for a meal for five was like, that was a lot.
And you're able to sleep at night.
I sleep great.
Good. Okay. How am I going to make all?
I have a great life.
You're good. Good. So what's fascinating now is how the vegan cuisine has evolved, and it continues to evolve, and it becomes more exciting, and it's not, brown rice and steamed veggies anymore, although I love brown rice and steamed veggies.
I do, too.
Going to PS Kitchen, it's a very unique place and very unique flavors. And I don't remember seeing a green salad on the menu. Have you?
There's not a green salad.
I mean, that's okay,
purposeful. I'm not a huge fan of salads, but we felt the pressure and we might put one on. But, I don't know, that to me, it's not a food group, but we have them at Terry, and we have the green smoothies. I never had kale before I moved to New York. I never had quinoa. I didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that I've been exposed to because of my diet and because of the restrictions, ironically, to the diet, that I've explored so many more things that are out there. It's great.
Yeah, it's when people start to get to know food and what's in their food. It's a wonderful thing, but it's also can be a very annoying thing because all the foodies can be very demanding and very particular. New Yorkers are very demanding about their food to begin with, wanting exactly what they want, and why don't you have it
when I want it?
And it shouldn't have, wheat or soy or whatever the trend is, problem food is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you've done very well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So tell me more about PS Kitchen and what's happening. You got a liquor license?
Oh, yeah.
Because when we were there, you didn't have
right.
it.
That's
but
right.
oh. as a result, you had some wonderful non-alcoholic
We did,
mixtures.
And we have since fully loaded those wonderful non-alcoholic drinks. So they are now available. Yeah.
I had the War of the Roses.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
It's stunning, beautiful with the colors and the flavors.
Yeah, we're ready for action. Mm-hmm.
Now, does the menu change, or is it?
The menu is going to change, yes, seasonally, and so we're already working on our fall menu right now. Yeah.
Can you entice me a little bit? I'm starving right now, so talking about food would be a good idea.
I mean, a lot of the idea. I mean, so we have the strawberry shortcake on the menu, which is a summer dish. It's one of my favorites. Just in terms of, there's an almond cream that goes with it, which is incredible. And I think that, to me, I personally think that makes the dish. So we're talking about, something simple as putting pears, which I love pears and I love apple, but probably pear, I think, would go nicely with that. Mm. But as far as the rest of the menu, I'm really leaving this up to my chefs. I throw them ideas. I tell them the things I like. We have a buffalo hen of the woods dish, and there's a German potato salad with purple sweet potatoes. And that was something that I asked for. I said, like, these are just, I just threw out some ideas. Like, these are dishes I loved as a kid. Elevate them. And they did. And so that I'm going to see what they can do with some of my fall ideas. But I haven't seen.
Did you have purple sweet potatoes?
No. We didn't. That was one. No, never.
Because I just discovered them a few years ago. The first purple sweet potato I ever had, it tasted like a donut to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're very. Yeah, they're really nice. But that's the idea. I take something that's sort of I don't want to say like peasant food because you know, but you know what I mean. I take something simple that my parents and grandparents made and. I say, you know, what can you do with this? And that's what they came up with. So I was really happy with it.
Yeah, lovely. Okay. I just had a thought and it left my head, but that's okay.
It sometimes happens.
Oh, especially when you're running like this on all four and
four
cylinders or whatever. Are there cylinders in cars anymore?
I believe so. I believe so. Some of them.
Okay. I wasn't going to say that you have to have salads on your menu, but I just found it so unique what you were offering. You know, we go to different restaurants with different kinds of cuisine. And so when you visit a Chinese restaurant or an Indian restaurant, you're not going to expect to find what you find in an Italian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And now vegan cuisine is developing in such a way that there are all these different facets of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to expect quinoa or brown rice at every restaurant.
Yeah.
Or green salads. Although I do recommend it because, I mean, well, sometimes it's the same thing with any restaurant where I wish more restaurants would offer vegan options because then everybody could dine together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that motivates me to create dishes is I want to appeal to, I was trying to think of like what my parents would want or what I would want before I was vegetarian. So, you know, I'm trying to appeal to the, you know, the mainstream essentially. And as you know, there's stereotypes of vegan food. And I think that Terry does a good job of bucking those stereotypes. So, and that's what I want to continue to do with PS. So those are, I'm very cognizant about the fact that we don't have brown rice and we don't have quinoa and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with it. And I love those myself personally. And not to say that it won't happen someday. It's just that when it will happen, it'll happen in a way that I think will be unexpected, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flavors and the textures are all very unusual, but not off-putting. Like, what is this? It's like, what is this, you know? But I'm thinking, I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I've been, my parents, my dad's 89, my mom's 84. They're going through some challenging times, and I've been spending more time with them, taking them to doctors and going to their restaurants, which has not been very pleasant for me. I've, like, visited every diner on Long Island. and they could use your help.
Boy.
But then I took them to a place that I wanted to go to, and then I had to, like, review the menu and say, okay, what is on here that their palate would understand?
Right.
They're not big fans of cumin and curry flavors. So, and that's a popular flavoring in a lot of vegan food. Yeah, I love it.
I totally understand that. I remember one of my first vegan Thanksgivings I went to, there was something with cumin in it. And I was like, this does not belong in a Thanksgiving dinner. I just thought it was sacrilegious in some way. But
Is PS Kitchen going to have a Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we will.
Menu?
Yeah.
Is it going to be anything like Thanksgiving as we know it?
Yes, it will.
Okay. Yeah. Turkey, mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce?
Elevated. Yeah. But elevated. We're gonna do some stuff with that for sure. Yeah.
Oh, I might have to check
that
out.
That's one of my favorite meals of the year for sure.
Yeah, so I love Thanksgiving, and I've loved preparing Thanksgiving meals. But it comes with so much stress and things when you're inviting people that aren't vegan. And I keep saying, okay, we're going out next year. We haven't done it yet. But maybe we'll go out this year.
You should. I mean, you can ask people that went to the Thanksgiving event at Woodstock last year. We catered that event, and I personally think my grandma made the best stuffing in the world, and we will probably have that stuffing featured in some way at our restaurant. I think it's delicious. So delicious.
Okay. Back to Terry. I read in your bio, which I didn't read to everyone, that you have a Plates by Terry, a catering business.
A catering business, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where do we get to find out about that or access it?
Placedbyterry.com.
Okay.
So there's a website. And we, we've catered several weddings. We've done some large events for, you know, like Woodstock and some other people.
So is the food a little more varied than it is at your restaurants?
It's closer to PS. Yeah. It's much different
than
Terry.
It's more elevated.
It's more elevated. Exactly.
I'm trying to use your vocabulary.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know.
Well,
okay.
You know, I mean, like I created the menu at Terry and myself with some people, and there's other things that I could cook that aren't appropriate for Terry, and this is a way for me to showcase those things. So that's fun. Yeah.
What did you have for lunch today?
Oh my God, I had like half of my menu at PS. It was awesome. I had the buffalo hen of the woods. I had the Colombian potato soup. I had the orzo alfredo.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
with the sun-dried tomato and chili compote. I had what else did I have? I had the crispy artichokes and the, I swear I'm not like plugging, I literally had all these things. I was just in another interview and they were like, they wanted to taste some things. So so a couple other things. The burger as well. We have the Beyond Meat burger, which is incredible. Oh God, that's so good. Yeah, it is. It's just so good. I mean, you have to recognize brilliance when there's brilliance.
Mm. Well, I had the ginger congee and I was just talking about it because I made some congee at home. My congee is like not real congee because I use whole grains, so the rice doesn't really melt.
Oh, right.
But it was still quite good, and I just love ginger and can't add enough.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now I am really suffering here because I am hungry.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's what happens on this food, on this show, where we talk about food. So what can we expect from you next?
Ooh, I want to, you know, I'm taking the training wheels off PS Kitchen a little bit, and then I will focus my eyes on another project.
I just remembered what it was that I forgot before. I was talking to Pedram Shojai before of Well.org, and he has this movie coming out called Prosperity. Mm-hmm. And the theme of the movie is about how we can actually have profit by having businesses that have a purpose and a social benefit. And then I was following up with you, which is one beautiful and delicious example of businesses that have a beautiful purpose and making delicious food that's good for us and good for the planet and kind of giving people access to make healthy choices that aren't going to be bad for the planet or cruel to animals.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a business that is profiting with a purpose.
Thank you. Yeah. Well. Yeah. And we're trying to create a social business here in New York. So not only are we giving all the profits to charity, but we're also working with organizations here in New York that I guess that's all I'll say. Just, you know, helping people locally. So we work with the Doe Fund and Restore the Bowery Mission here locally.
Thank you. We're out. We're done.
Great.
And I wanted to wrap up with that very bit of last information. They give their profits to charity, and they're helping very worthwhile organizations. Beautiful.
Thank you,
Craig Cochran, for joining me on It's All About Food. And go and visit PS Kitchen today.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody, thanks for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been another episode of It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.